Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that year he was the full season coach. It became clear after about game 35 what direction they had to go. And you're trying to coach to save face, where the organization is saying, hey, we need to see these guys. We need to see who's going to be part of this, because it doesn't look like we're going to be a playoff contending team. And that's a tough spot to be in when you don't have a multiple-year contract. He goes to Cleveland, takes the job under John Beilein. And I'll be honest with you, when Beilein got hired, I said, if this guy makes it 2 years, I'll be shocked. If he makes it out of the midway point of the second year, I'll be shocked. I didn't think he'd be gone the first year before the end of the season, but it just didn't seem like a great fit. Well, JB gets his opportunity. Things don't work out for whatever reason. There's all kinds of speculation. Only the people in that locker room truly know. But he gets an opportunity to go to Detroit. And I think when you look at that, what they've done, I was kind of equating it to the years that Denver missed the playoffs, I think two or three years in a row by a game or two.
Yeah.
And then they come back the next year and they're the two seed, and I think they got bounced in the first round. And everybody's like, oh, is Michael Malone the right guy? And they're like, hold on, that's their first real run in the playoffs as a high seed. Yes, Detroit had a run last year. There are some new faces this year, but they've consistently improved, consistently gotten better. You never want to get bounced as a one seed for multiple reasons. Obviously, as a coach, it looks like you can't elevate the team to the next level. I don't think that's the case with JB. I think it would have put some pressure on him moving into next year. I think he would have been fine. But, yeah, now if he gets out of that one, comes back, and let's say they get to the conference finals. Now there's a whole different aura around it, which is, you know, one of the crazy things about the NBA playoffs and like a game seven. You think about, you know, game sevens that haven't gone. Take the Grizzlies one, for example. Nobody panicked when the Grizzlies dropped that game seven to the Clippers, and that game seven wasn't even close. It was over 8 minutes into the game. Chris Paul clearly had just said, we ain't losing this game, and the Grizzlies didn't match that. But Lionel Hollins was still part of it. And Lionel Hollins didn't – it wasn't a bunch of unnecessary criticism. Eventually, at the end of the day, the team and Lionel parted ways, and Lionel went on to Brooklyn and so on and so forth. But I think, you know, it shows how thin the line can be. Like, if you're on the right side of the line, the rhetoric is much more positive. If you're on the wrong side of the line, the rhetoric becomes negative and then becomes a dark cloud. So I'm happy for him, because I do think he's a tremendous coach. I think he's a tremendous person to have running a team, because he gets it. He grew up around it. He understands the value of relationships. And so, I think it was great that he got that, because there's no talking heads behind him, whether they know or not. It doesn't matter. In the age that we live in now with social media and all these things, one, you know, little spark can light a fire that's really hard to get away from, so to speak.
Eric, we appreciate your time, my man. Thank you.
All right, Jeffrey, talk to you next week, and we'll know what we're going to do.
I know, that's right. It's, I don't know. I'm at the point, and maybe I'm a wuss, and I'm trying to avoid the negative. It's like, if you just gave me six, I think I'd take it right now.
I get it. Well, I hope your lovely wife has a wonderful Mother's Day, and to all the mothers out there, certainly hope you have a wonderful Sunday, and we'll talk about it next Tuesday.
You're putting a lot of pressure on me. Right there with that.
Hey, buddy, that's kind of part of the gig. I hate to say it.
Yeah, no,
I hate to say it. You've got one that by all accounts, seems to understand who she married and then what you know, drives your bus, so to speak. So that day, it's kind of time to celebrate that.
All right, my man. We appreciate it.
All right, bro.
Eric Hasatine, of course, of the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network. We come back. AK's responded online, so we'll update Andy Kennedy's response to Tiger fans that have taken offense to some of the comments that have been going around the recruiting aspect of it. We'll talk about that and more, get into last night's action from the NBA, as well as some college football a little bit later on in the program. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Onyx Sports had some NBA comps that was going viral on the internet last night. We'll talk about that during the next segment. Before we get to that, let's get into the list. The Minnesota Timberwolves. All right, the Timberwolves held on as a three-point attempt fell just, I don't know if short was the right term, maybe kind of back iron. They hang on to steal game one in San Antonio, 104-102 over the San Antonio Spurs. Victor Wembanyama did, however, set an NBA record for an NBA playoff record with 12 blocks last night. And George and DeMichael and I were talking about it during the game. The thing that I thought was interesting was Minnesota seemed to be okay with Wembanyama like controlling the paint. Like, it still seemed to be their
they
MO
kept going at him.
Right. They kept going at him, and yes, he made the plays. And it's kind of interesting because normally what you've been seeing is when he is in there, everyone just kind of avoids the paint and starts basically trying to jack up threes, but they really didn't. They kept going at him, kept going at him. And I'm not going to sit there and act like, oh, they crushed him, but it was interesting to see a team not panic and stick with that approach.
No doubt. Look, maybe it's Captain Obvious here, but man, Minnesota has really impressed me this postseason. To win that game six without Ant, without my ginger brother, Dante DiVincenzo, without Ayo Dosunmu, and now to go into San Antonio, double-digit underdogs. Ant, I mean, what did Julius Randle call him? Wolverine?
I think the guy was
supposed to be out weeks and miss 9 days. So I don't know if they win this series. They probably don't. I think San Antonio is just a better team. But this reminds me a little bit, maybe not as drastic, but it reminds me a little bit of the finals a year ago, where I think the expectation was, cute story, Indiana. Now you're going to get steamrolled by the Thunder. And obviously that wasn't the case. And if Halliburton doesn't pop his Achilles in Game 7, who knows what happens in that one. So I'm just excited that it feels like we're going to have a series here, because it did feel like, with the uncertainty of Ant and the realization that, you know, Lakers, God bless your heart, but it ain't going to happen against the Thunder. It was just going to be like sweep, sweep. We're waiting around for the Western Conference Finals. And now I don't think I'm overreacting. I think this is going to be a really competitive series. I do still think the Spurs win it, but I've just been really impressed by this Timberwolves team. Let me ask you a question. I'm curious. Are Memphis fans pulling for Mike Conley?
I think everyone pulls for Mike. It was a lot more complicated when the Grizzlies and the Timberwolves were kind of duking it out for like that same place in the pecking order. And then it's like the Timberwolves blew past them and you didn't even have time to think about it. I mean, I know that last night when he hit the three that felt like the dagger, I know technically it wasn't, but it did feel like a dagger. I was pretty pumped for him because he hasn't had a great year. I mean, they basically trade him to try and get him cut so they could bring him back essentially right on a cheap deal. And he's not had a great year on the basketball floor, but I think that was kind of the other thing that stood out to me.
That's such a good point. He was traded twice.
Correct.
And because he was traded twice, he was able to re-sign with the Timberwolves.
Correct. The thing, though, that kind of that I'm at least filing away of, maybe this isn't just a game one fluke. The one adage that applies to this Spurs team is they haven't really been here before. And even though they have, it's not every single player is a young guy, I did feel like the thing that was noticeable to me down the last really 6 minutes, Minnesota always felt in control. And they, like, you could tell, like, that's the team that's been in a bunch of playoff games. Like, they knew the sets that they wanted to get into. They didn't panic. And even though they had a couple of bad turnovers late, I didn't feel like those were necessarily, like, freak-out moments. I thought those, honestly, were more awesome plays by the Spurs defensively, and I give credit. But it also felt to me a little like you could feel the young team panicking a little bit. Like, in general, I am the don't call a timeout late because I think you're better off. I feel like nobody's defense gets set, and that's how you get the best shot. Did it not feel like, though, when they didn't push it, they being the Spurs, didn't push it, didn't that feel like an opportunity to call timeout?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know they ended up getting a good look, but I was confused why they didn't go with a timeout. You know, back to your point about, you know, postseason experience. Minnesota's got postseason experience, right? They got a decent amount of it. You look at this Spurs team, your best players are Castle, Wemby, Fox, Harper. I mean, none of those guys. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, what, played a little bit? Of
they had that one, in that San one, Antone, or in, that Sacramento. One run in Sacramento. Do they get to the? Do they get to the finals?
Seven, they lost in seven to the Warriors.
Was that the conference finals or the semis?
That was. I think that was the first round. I'm looking at his. He's only played in the postseason once before.
Yeah, no, Fox. I mean, and
they lost in seven to the Golden State Warriors. It was a hell of a series. But that was the year Golden State. Did Golden State win the title that year?
So is that 21-22?
No, it was 22-23. Or no, that was the year. That was the year they lost to the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, or in the Western Conference Semis.
Because I was trying to do the Grizzlies lose to the who do the Warriors beat in the Conference Finals in their title, their last title. So
Mavericks. They beat Nuggets, Grizz, Mavericks in 22.
Celtics,
yep.
So I think that was the next year, correct?
Yeah, next year, that was the year Memphis was the two, right, and lost to the Lakers?
Yep.
And that was a hell of a series. It went seven, it was back and forth. Kings win it, and then they lose in six to the Lakers, the Warriors did. So, yeah, I think it's a fair point. I mean, Minnesota...
Well, and like Castle, to your point, like, I love him, but, like, he fouls out. You know what I mean?
I mean, and, you know, you look at Wembanyama, and it's almost like we anticipate him to never do anything wrong. I mean, he had a triple-double last night, but he was not efficient from the field. He was 0 of 8 from 3. So I would expect the Spurs to bounce back in Game 2 and take care of business as, you know, 9.5-point favorites, whatever they are. But I just think Minnesota's got some sort of, and I hate using this kind of terminology, but they doesn't feel like they just have, like, grit. They're like a grit, grimy team. They got bigs that they're willing to throw at Wemby.
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about is...
I mean, what about the fact that, like, I mean, Rudy is kind of... The older Wemby, right? They're both, they know everything about each other. Does that give a slight advantage to Minnesota?
I don't think it hurts. I guess the other thing that I was thinking about is, see if you think that this feels true. Julius Randle, to me, when he was with the Knicks and kind of the way that the NBA teams played out, it was like, I felt like he was overrated. And now maybe it's because he's not with the Knicks. I feel like he's underrated on the Wolves because, like, every time I feel like I'm watching it in a clutch moment, like, he's just kind of in control. And, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like now he's playing at a level that was probably more fitting of the hoopla that he was getting as a Knick. And I feel like it's somehow just flying completely under the radar.
I mean, he had a couple seasons in New York that, I mean, statistically speaking, we're awesome. But to your point, I think because the stats were so good and he was playing for the Knicks, it was a bit inflated. And now, I mean, if you told someone that Julius Randle averaged 21 points, seven rebounds, and five assists per game, they'd be like, what? But that's what he did this year. He played in almost every game. He's durable. 21, 7, and 5 were his stats this year.
No,
I agree. And it's like, it felt like, and I hate using the terminology basketball nerds because I listen to a lot of them. I listen to Zach Lowe. By the way, how about Zach Lowe getting a cameo in Friends and Neighbors? Didn't see that coming.
We got to get a better agent.
Yeah. I was like, wait, is Zach Lowe in this scene? And then Rachel Nichols had like speaking parts. But it did feel like the nerdery was like, yeah, he's scoring a lot, but he's not super efficient. So I was like, okay, so maybe he's overrated. And now he goes to Minnesota where he's what? Second fiddle to Anthony Edwards. Maybe you could argue third. And he's a pretty darn good player.
I think
he can't be that main guy.
Yeah.
I think it's a fair way to look at it. And that's okay.
I don't know. Like, it's one of those trades where
they both won.
Because, like, that was the other thing that we were discussing it yesterday. So last night, the Knicks absolutely throttle the Sixers 137-98.
How about a combined, what, last two games they've won by 90?
Well, and then I think if you didn't they win the one before that?
They won that one by
like 20 something?
28 or something like that. Yeah.
I mean, I made the joke last week. If you missed the first half of the Knicks-Hawks game, you thought your phone was broken. It was 75-25.
Oh, yeah.
In the first, with still time to go. But the other
did
thing.
Did we talk about my bet?
No. Did you tell me you didn't take the points.
Hawks first half.
Because at one point, I think I saw somebody screenshot it and said the Hawks got up to plus 60.
Yeah, we were watching it. We were on air last Thursday. Look, I
mean, the only thing I can remember like that, remember that Monday night football? It was Rams-Chiefs, and it was a flag football game. And I remember the total got over – the total, I think, at one point got well over like 120 or 130. But, like, I feel like everyone kept – everyone that you and I would know would keep smashing the under, and then, like, well, that game cruised over 100 points.
Yeah, last night, I was on air last night. I'm like, well, at some point, shooting regression has to kick in. It did not. I mean, everybody for the Knicks was making everything. I mean, look at the starting lineup. OG Anunoby, 2 of 2 from 3, 7 of 8 from the field. Karl Anthony Towns, 3 of 5 from 3, 7 of 11 from the field. Mikal Bridges, 3 of 5 from 3, 7 of 10 from the field. Jalen Brunson had, what, 27 in the first half? 3 of 6, 12 of 18 from the field. I mean, even when they emptied the bench, my guy Tyler Kolek came in and hit a couple of threes. It was contagious.
Well, we learned last week that, I'm trying to remember how we said it, Pacome Dadie. He got another 8 minutes, George, last night.
Oh, don't worry. I was invested in this one.
We had how does Jeremy Shochan not get minutes? How do you be on? How are you on the bench in that game and they don't play you?
Saving his red shirt.
Yeah, that's true.
Diawara had to get those 8 minutes. Also, 1 of 2 from three.
Well, the other thing though that. Because I'm trying to decide, how seriously do we take the East?
In what regard? To win the championship?
Correct.
Zero?
But, like, I was thinking about it. It's like, am I just such a Knicks hater? Because I think I can actually make this argument, and this is not a radio take. This is what my eyes tell me. The best player on that team right now is Karl Anthony Towns.
He does a lot, man.
And he is playing really, really well. And you're not, like, I feel like the ultimate Rorschach test is, like, if you watch Towns play, do you sit there and get frustrated? And I can't really remember many times this playoffs that I've been frustrated. I was like, nah, man, he's just playing really good basketball.
Look, I mean, if you look at their starting lineup, it's a pretty darn good starting lineup, right? OG Anunoby, Karl Anthony Towns, Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson. There's a reason they traded however many first-round picks for Mikal Bridges. But
I think four, because the Grizzlies, I think, only offered three.
I love the fact that the NBA playoffs has so many different lives, because when it was 1-1, we had on Sal Licata, who was a radio host at WFAN, now doing his own thing. And I asked him about Hawks Knicks. He said, no way I can touch the Knicks tonight. Can't trust them. And they lost that game. They were down 2-1, and it felt like, all right, here we go. Knicks blowing it again, just like they did to the Pacers a year ago. And since then, I mean, 16-point win, 29-point win, 51-point win, 39-point win.
Well, it's like every win they have is a laugher, and then they lost 2 one-possession games, right?
Correct, yeah. The two losses they had were by 1 point.
Like, that's kind of where I'm sitting there going, like, is it disrespectful right now? And again, there's a lot of basketball before we get there, but it's like, they do have the makings because they can guard on the perimeter. Now, I do wonder if you go up against a team that can go shot for shot, can they take advantage of Brunson on the defensive end?
So to put it into perspective, the Western Conference right now at DraftKings is minus 500 to win the NBA Finals.
And putting that in percentage layman's terms for everyone else, basically what, like an 80, a little bit over an 80% chance?
Yeah, let me double check. I think it's 80%.
I can't remember if implied, because obviously implied probability goes well over 100%, but
83.3% is minus 500. Is the odds are telling you that it's an 83% chance.
Basically what they're saying is if they played it six times, the West would win five.
Correct. And maybe, did the Pistons and Cavs get their scare and now they're going to wake up? I'm not convinced this series is over. I still like Philadelphia a little bit, not to maybe.
I'm willing
series.
To kind of throw that one away. Like, hey, they just played Saturday night, game 7.
I mean, Oklahoma City, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't they lose a game to the Timberwolves by 40 last year in the playoffs?
I think so. I want to say that they're because didn't they only beat the Wolves? I think they did a gentleman's sweep. Is that right?
So last year they beat. So last year against Minnesota, they won in five, as you pointed out. And the middle game, they lost 143-101. Lost by 42.
In the Western Conference Finals.
In the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, here is. So they win by, 26. 15, lose by 42, win by 2, and then won by 30.
So, you know, it's funny going back to the series because we were on air last night and Knicks obviously win going away easily. And the thought was, all right, well, what does the point spread open up at, right? What do we get, right? Game one closed around 8 in favor of the New York Knicks, and I think this is, for those who don't gamble all that much, this is kind of an interesting exercise because, okay, we just saw this game unfold, and the Knicks won by 39. What's the point spread going to open up at?
All right, so last night was 13.5, is that right?
No. Last night was 8.
8. I'm going to say it only bumps up to like, because they can't give you too much because of zigzag theory. I'm going to say it open, or is it opened yet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So is it at what, 9.5?
7.5. Circa's actually 6.5.
Because people are going to really hammer the zigzag.
Yeah. I think the sharper guys will probably anticipate shooting regression from New York. You know, you did see a little bit of bump in the total to the over because of what we saw, but yeah, not real much movement there. So you saw a 39-point game, but you know, odds makers are going to stick to their power ratings unless they see something drastically different. Now, look, you could see over a series, you could see the totals and things move. I think it was the Detroit-Orlando series. I want to say that total moved like 19 points from game one to game seven. So you can get adjustments, there's no doubt. And, you know, we saw adjustments in Lakers-Houston. Now, a lot of that had to do with Kevin Durant missing five of the six games, but you saw adjustments there. But, I mean, I haven't bet it yet, but I'll probably be on Philadelphia tomorrow, plus the points. And I mean, if it comes up on the wrong side, it is what it is. But, yeah, I think that's the way I'm looking. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, as we look at these, and I know we get started tonight with Cleveland and Detroit, but as we look at, if you remove, are you of the belief that the Lakers will be lucky to win one game?
Yes.
Okay. I am too. I mean, if you look at the odds right now, the favorite for these outcomes is a sweep. I mean, that's just kind of telling you what this series is. But of the other three, point spread-wise, Detroit and Cleveland is expected to be the closest. What do you think is going to be the best series of the three?
So can you define best series?
That's a good question.
Because
most competitive out of the seven, having the most competitive games. So you could have five competitive games, or you could have seven blowouts.
Because like we were talking about this last week, where one of the frustrations that I've had with the NBA playoffs has been we now tend to care how many games does the series go. That is the, like, let's use that Hawks-Knicks example.
Right.
The Knicks lost two games by 1 point and then won the rest by what? A combined 110?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something along those lines. Like, was that a competitive series?
To me, no.
Because I'm with you. I care way more. This is where I said maybe I owe LeBron an apology from the most competitive sweep ever against the Nuggets.
That series
did have four close games.
That series was awesome. Like, it was really good. Now, we all wanted more, but having a seven-game series where every game is blown up, or, you know what I'm saying, like, is a blowout, I'd much rather have that Denver-Lakers series.
I totally agree with you. To answer your question, my gut says the Timberwolves are not. This isn't like a. This wasn't just a fluke, and like yes, obviously there's gonna be some injury management with Ant. I think I saw last night. I was like, nah, one team has been here before. The other team's more talented. That tends to lend itself to pretty competitive games.
Yeah, I'm trying not to be reactionary, but what I saw in the first round and what I saw last night, like I said, I don't know if they win this series. They probably don't. I think this series is going to be some dogfights. And like Cleveland-Detroit very well could be. I mean, once again, that from a series price standpoint is basically a pick 'em. I think Detroit is a slight favorite solely because they get game seven at home. So that could be, but I think, is it accurate to say, even though it is a, you know, 1-4 matchup, I just think from a star power standpoint, people are more interested in San Antonio, Minnesota.
I think so too, but I think part of that problem is, I think Detroit having to go seven games to beat Orlando and Cleveland having to go seven games to beat Toronto, I think everybody's kind of set them aside as like not real serious teams. I think the problem I have with that series is it's like Detroit's path to winning is Cade has to get 40.
Get my dog Duncan Robinson to hit some threes, baby.
That was one of the more bizarre games on Friday that I've ever watched. A, it was disgusting. Now, I give our boy DeMichael Cole all the credit in the world. He did call out on Friday. He put it in his five best games of the weekend because he thought it was going to be so gross, like so bad that it's good. And he kind of ended up being right because I was thinking about when the Magic were down, or I'm sorry, when the Pistons were down, what, 22? I think they got it down as much as 24, but it was 22 in the second half.
If they were down 22 at halftime.
If you would have graded out on a curve for actual good basketball, being down 22 in that game felt like more significant than the Hawks being down 50 to the Knicks. And there was that weird moment where as soon as Detroit took the lead, you're like, the Magic have no chance. Like, I've never seen where a game like flipped to the point where there was still enough poor shot making all around that the Magic were not out of it, yet they felt completely and utterly dead.
I don't know how much you talked about it on Monday. The stats that came out of that game.
Was it 24 straight misses?
23 straight misses. A stretch of 16 minutes and 48 seconds of game time. In real life, it was 45 minutes without a made field goal.
I mean, it was something to behold.
45 minutes.
Did we have a tournament game? No, I'll tell you what it was. The Tigers, one of those games down the stretch, maybe it was USF at USF, like the Tigers went to Tampa, and they were actually pretty competitive for like the first 10 minutes. And then if you combined the close of the half with halftime to the start of the second half, it was like they went something like 47 minutes with one make. That was good stuff. All right, let's do... Actually, I wanted to ask you this real quick. So last night, Anthony Edwards, post-game, was talking about Mike. And he offered up the... When he used to play 2K, he played as Mike Conley. Should we feel old?
Yeah, there's so many things that make us feel old.
Well, I was also thinking about this. So you know the new, I don't know if your buddies do it and your like high school, college buddies do it, but the new one is kid of player we watched grow commits. I'm in the minority, and I wanted to know how you felt. When I saw Maurice Jones the third, right? Is he the right? Because Maurice Jones Jr. was, I don't know if he's the third or if he's like, they have a different middle name. He committed to UCLA, and everybody else was freaking out. I got to be honest, like, that wasn't one that bothered me.
No.
Because I was like, MJD played pretty decently, like, long. Like, Frank Gore Jr.'s kid committing while his dad was still playing, that one was tough.
I mean, LeBron James is literally throwing passes to his child right
in
now.
In playoff games.
Like, I remember watching LeBron in high school. I went to the All-Star game in D.C. when he was a part of it, and I was in high school. So that one's pretty wild. Yeah, it's funny because, like, Larry Fitzgerald's son is on Notre Dame. He's a freshman. And I'm like, yeah, okay, it checks
that
out.
That feels about right. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Like, that checks out. Like, I think I get, you know, when my buddies, when I see on, like, Facebook that, like, I've got buddies that their kid is in high school, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa. Like, that feels, like, man, when did you start? And you're like, oh, yeah. They had kids like when my parents had kids. We all of us seemingly got started late in our generation.
All right, speaking of LeBron and comps, so Onyx Sports last night did this generation comparing to the generation before. We got to talk about these comps because one I think is wildly disingenuous, but let's see if I'm the crazy one. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
We got some post-spring practice buzz to talk about from the world of college football. But before we do that, Tim, I'm not bringing this up to basically say that engagement farming won. I was more doing it from the exercise. Okay, so Onyx Sports last night came up with NBA comps for five current players. Five current players are SGA, Anthony Edwards, Jalen Brunson, Victor Wembanyama, and this kid known as LeBron James.
Young fella right there.
I did think
to himself.
Yep, that's literally the comp. And I actually was like, that's fine. Like, I'm cool. The previous generation's comp to himself is himself. Like, yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, I don't even know if you were even trying to say
there's no one. Look, this has nothing to do with
the debate.
There's no one who has ever done what he is doing right now.
I mean,
at
what
41 years old.
Yeah. Oh, that. Yeah. I was
there
like,
is no one. Michael Jordan had retired this is his third time he'd already retired. Like, there is no one that is doing what he's doing right now. That doesn't make him the greatest of all time. It's just there's no one that has done this.
All right. The laziest one.
Okay.
Victor Wembanyama's comp.
Sean Bradley.
Nope. The Enormous Mormon. Think as lazy as you can and not and literally like the game is nowhere near similar.
Like Rudy Gobert?
The laziest one is Tim Duncan.
Oh, yeah, that no.
They don't even play the same position.
Right. Tim Duncan's arguably the greatest power forward ever to play the sport. Mr. Fundamental. Good, you know, yeah, that's why? Because they both play for the Spurs, I guess?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Jalen Brunson's comp was Dwayne Wade. Long college career, successful college career. Dwayne was, I think he went third in the draft. Obviously a much higher draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger. I didn't actually hate that because, like, in terms of what they're
going... Wade was a pretty good defender at his peak, though.
I was going to say, the biggest issue with it is Wade is a much better defender, but I also attribute that to size. But in terms of, like, microwave-type scoring, like, very, very good offensive player, it's like, all right, I can see what they're going for. Ant, they went with Durant.
No.
The one, though, that offended me the most...
How can you compare Anthony Edwards to Kevin Durant?
I think it's just the offensive game.
I don't really like comps anyways, but like I have a hard time. I think Kevin Durant's one of one. He's so smooth, obviously.
I agree, but
tall.
We've been talking about this though. I feel like oftentimes. Like, even if we talk about, like, okay, usually when a player hits the end, it doesn't end well. The difference, though, I feel like with him is, as we've gotten to the end of his career, the highlights of his career are not aging well. Like, the more that you think about the two titles, the cheaper they get. And they felt really cheap in real time.
Yeah, he needed, I mean, how different do we look at Durant if they win in 21? Because that Nets team was curb stomping the Bucks until, was it Harden? Kyrie was already hurt. I think it was the Harden injury.
Yeah, hammy, right?
Because game one, I'm trying to remember, game one, the Nets won by like 30-something, right?
That sounds right.
And then game two, I think it was competitive, but the Nets, I think the Nets won.
All right.
And then, of course, we had the, you know, the toe on the line three-pointer.
I'm trying to, okay.
But yeah, to your point, it is. Kevin Durant's going to be one of the more interesting historical pieces to look at because it's, unless he somehow, all right, here we go.
So yeah,
Brooklyn won game one by 8, won game two by 39, lost game 3 by 3, game 4 Milwaukee won, Brooklyn won game 5, and then we got to game 7, and that was the toe on the line. Durant went for 48 in that game. Durant had a 49-point game in game 5 and a 48-point game. I think I don't even want to say the L word, the legacy word. If they win that championship, which I think they probably do if they win that series.
They're probably going to beat the Hawks, and then they're probably going to beat the Suns. Yes.
Right. So, and he was by far the best player on that team, especially with the injuries mounting up. If they win that series, if his foot is a half size smaller and he has got 3 rings and one really on his own, do we look at him any differently? Because right now, you think about, he always seems unhappy no matter where he goes. This series, whether he was injured or not, I think he probably was. I think Kevin Durant's a competitor, but it's not going to age well to your point about sitting out 5 of the 6 games. Yeah, I don't know what's next for Durant, but yeah.
There's also the weird, you know, the burners calling out his own team and, you know, the burners, like you can say like that's weird in itself, but it's like then I just refuse to believe that that wasn't going to be somewhat of an issue in a locker room. And it seems like that's likely.
Yep. Is he going to be on Brooklyn next year or
Houston
next year?
My gut says no.
It's mine too.
Because we were debating. His trade value is higher than Jaws. But I don't know if it's as clear as you think.
So he's got a $43 million cap hit next year and then a player option for 27-28.
Right, and I fall into the category of, yeah, he's going to pick that up. Yeah. Because who's going to pay him that much money? I mean, I guess the only way around
it is... He's the type of guy that might just opt out because he's weird like that.
But the only way I could see him doing it is if somebody trades for him now and then does like the pre...
Like a sign and trade?
Yeah, like the pre-extension thing.
What team would... I mean, because when healthy, he's a guy that you want. Like a team like, I don't know. I mean, anytime there's a trade, they're like, oh, Lakers. It's like, well,
I don't know how they have
how the, you can't make.
Yeah.
I mean, LeBron could take less money, which I doubt he'll do.
That would be the first time in his history.
Right.
Because remember, he doesn't want the other guys to have to take less. Because if he takes less, then they'll take less.
I do wonder at some point, is he going to, I mean, he's going to be 42 next year. Like, is he ever going to just take the vet minimum? Probably not. Because look, I mean, as much as we could begrudge the guy, I don't know, $50 million is still a lot of money, and he could get it. I mean, how many franchises would be like, well, yeah, we'll pay you $50 million. Come out here. Do your thing.
I mean, what if
where's he going to be?
If Ballmer can beat the salary cap circumvention, could Durant go to the Clippers?
Because they have to trade him and they have to match salaries, right?
Right.
So who's just got to...
Because I feel like you're not... The idea would be Kawhi and him.
So the only person on the Clippers right now that would be able to match salary would be Garland. And then they would be without a point guard, except for Chris Dunn. And they already tried that.
So... If you're Houston, what's their draft pick situation? Because I know they got a bunch in the which trade did they get a bunch of draft picks?
Was it when they traded Harden?
Yeah, I think they got a bunch from Brooklyn, right?
Is there an obvious one we're missing?
Houston this year does not have their first round pick.
Because they had to give that up to Phoenix?
I think somehow this was involved in an OKC trade.
So next year they have Phoenix. They have Phoenix's first next year, no protections. In 2028, they have their own. And then they have a pick swap with Brooklyn in 27. So next year, they have a Phoenix first and a pick swap with Brooklyn, which in theory could be really good. So my question is this. If you're Milwaukee and Giannis is saying, I'm out, do you take Kevin Durant and maybe a younger player that you can build around and a couple of those picks?
If I'm Milwaukee...
Well, we don't know what the situation is with Giannis.
Yeah.
Right? Is it untenable?
Well, I mean, I think the other lesson from the East is, like, no one's really that far off, right?
And
but the problem
here,
is they have so
the
few mechanisms to actually, like, get better.
Right. So let's say you get... Let's say you get those two picks next year, the Phoenix pick and the Brooklyn pick swap, and then throw in a couple more. I mean, you're still getting... I mean, what did Kevin Durant average this year?
I mean, he had a statistically a pretty good year.
Right. I mean, he might be a pain in your you-know-what. I mean, he averaged 26 a game. If you know that this situation is toast, like, could you get Reed Shepard and Kevin Durant and a couple of picks for Giannis? Like, I just did Trade Machine right now. Kevin Durant, Reed Shepard for Giannis, the trade went through.
But if you're Milwaukee and you're trading Giannis, aren't you trying to get the, I want all those picks?
Right. So that's the situation is like how much does Houston, does Houston think they can get?
If you're Houston, are you better off going, let's figure it out next year and see what it looks like with Van Vliet?
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, Steven Adams was out all year.
That's
new. Van Vliet was out. I mean, also Milwaukee, they don't have any picks, so they can't really play the tank game.
No, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
They traded all their picks, so if you could get, let's say you get that Brooklyn pick swap, which is gold, because Brooklyn's going to be awful next year. You get Durant and a young piece like Reed Shepard, and you might get a top 10 pick this year. I actually don't think that's a terrible deal, especially if Giannis is... I mean, Giannis is kind of getting to the level... Like, this is an off-season discussion because I think we all, for the most part, oh, he's funny. He went and drove through Chick-fil-A with the championship trophy.
He said a dad joke and an accent.
But there's a reason that Shams continues to drop these things every week, it feels like, regarding Giannis. And then during the season, Giannis wants to play. The Bucks don't want to play him. It just doesn't feel like it's going to end well in Milwaukee.
It doesn't. I don't envy their position, though, because, like, in the end, it's like if he does say that he wants to be here, it's like you have to try.
Right.
And
he's a homegrown guy. He's the face of that city. And if he says he wants to stay, then yes, you cannot trade him. But if he gives the indication, I want out, I don't want to be back next year, at some point you got to go and make some moves.
All right, the last one, and this is the comp that actually offended me the most, even though we kind of talked through them, and really the only one that makes a lot of sense is LeBron to LeBron. SGA to Steph Curry does not make sense.
No.
Like, SGA is a great scorer. He is not an elite shooter. And the other thing, though, is I would say this in SGA's defense. SGA is a lot more trustworthy with the basketball. Like, Steph was a turnover machine. Now, he made a bunch of, like, Steph is kind of like the quarterback that trusts his arm. Like, he'll make any and every throw. But, I mean, he basically had like a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio while SGA is sitting here roughly basically at like 10-to-1.
I mean, I get it. SGA is a hard guy to compare someone to. He's going to be a multi-time MVP. Steph's a multi-time MVP. But that's where, I mean, body type, they're different, right? I mean, SGA is not thick, but he's taller.
He's much longer.
He's definitely got more length to him. He's a better defender than Steph, even though Steph can get some steals sometimes.
Steph's a cheater defense guy. He like lets you go by so he can rip the ball from behind. He's what you do when you don't really want to like face up and play D. Like, he's kind of a havoc guy. All right, let's take a quick break. But before we do that, I want to remind you can sell your home the easy way without leaving thousands and thousands of dollars on the table. All you have to do is call my friend Josh Hysall and his team at Keller Williams Realty. Josh knows so many people are interested in taking one of those cash offers for their homes. You know him, you see him on billboards, you get all the unsolicited texts about him. But he wants to remind you, the thing is, most of those cash...
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.